You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. A new research study published by Global Change Biology reveals widespread damage to forest canopies across the Pacific Northwest, apparently due to a heat dome from several years ago. The study was produced by researchers at Oregon State University and the U.S. Forest Service. It identified more than 1,000 square miles of damaged forests, which is nearly the size of the state of Rhode Island. One of the co-authors of that study joins us today. My guest is Dr. Chris Still. He's a professor in the College of Forestry at Oregon State University. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
So this study sounds like a fairly big deal. Can you tell me what a heat dome is?
Yeah, well, heat dome is a meteorological term for a large area of high pressure, and it's sort of a bit like a lid that traps hot air near the surface, and it results from like a big ridge of high pressure sitting over an area that kind of gets stuck and, again, keeps the heat sort of trapped. And it can lead to heat waves, which is what we experienced in late June of 2021.
Okay. Tell me about the findings of this study and your role in the research.
Yeah, well, this what happened for anyone who, I think people who were there in Oregon or Washington or British Columbia remember this well. It was an incredible record-shattering event where there were hundreds of high-temperature records and all-time temperature records were shattered, again, in late June of 2021. And that was the sort of heat dome event. And then there have been a number of studies, at last count, well over 70 different studies across a range of sciences looking at the impacts of this extreme heat event on a huge range of things, from fire currents to snowpack to lots of human health impacts, because it actually killed for a number of people. And our interest was sparked by, within days of the event, people began to notice large areas of forest canopies in western Oregon, particularly at the coast and also Washington, where the leaves had lost color and they turned kind of brown or green. Almost like a coral bleaching event or something like that. But in this case, it was a canopy. And it quickly got the name of scorch because it was an analogy to what happens when a fire burns near a forest and it kind of cooks the leaves and they turn orange and brown as they lose all that chlorophyll molecules, which give them the green color. And so we noticed that really quickly and wanted to understand first, what was the extent of damage? And there were some initial surveys done by the Forest Service and the Oregon Department of Forestry and the Washington Department of Natural Resources using aircraft where they would fly really low and slow, and there are trained observers using binoculars looking at forests and trying to understand if there's damage or mortality and try to attribute that damage to drivers. And so there's a limited survey done within a couple months of the heat dome event in 2021, and it suggested there was a fairly large area of this foliar scorch or damage where the leaves actually died. And we wanted to sort of build on that and use satellites, which are the best tool we have available for sort of wall-to-wall mapping of things like forests. And so that was one goal of the study, was to really map and quantify the total area of damage across Oregon and Washington from this event. And we limited. We didn't include British Columbia. There was undoubtedly a lot of forest damage in British Columbia, but we limited this to Oregon and Washington. And that's how we came up with that number of several hundred thousand hectares, or about 1,000 square miles. So that was one goal of the study, was to map and quantify where it happened, how much it was. And then a secondary goal was to understand why those areas were more sensitive than others. Why were the vulnerable areas scorched? And so we looked at a bunch of factors, including biological factors like tree species and tree size and age, and then physical factors like the slope where something is sitting, if it's on a hilltop or down in a valley bottom, or the aspect, which direction it's facing. And the aspect thing was really obvious immediately afterwards when people noticed this, because it was really apparent that a lot of the hillsides that were most damaged or scorched were either west-facing or south-facing. And our initial understanding was that was very likely due to the combination of very high afternoon temperatures, which were record-breaking air temperatures, combined with direct sunlight on those leaves. So those are kind of the two main goals of the study.
How did you qualify what damage you observed? How do you know something was damaged by this heat dome?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so, I mean, visually, you know, the human eye is quite remarkable. We could pick out this change in color really well with our eyes. And again, these trained observers on aircraft could see this as well, because these nice green canopies turn orange or brown or different colors. And for a number of the species, they also lost their needles really quickly. So they lost a lot of their canopy as well. So there are these changes that you can actually see, and they show up pretty clearly in satellite data. The satellites have gotten really good at their spatial resolution, how well they can see something. And also they can pick up different changes in different colors of light coming up the landscape, like the amount of green light coming off and the amount of red light coming off. So it became a pretty, after going through a whole bunch of the typical methods you do to develop this, it was a fairly robust way to sort of say this is damaged and this is not, based essentially on the change in greenness. So canopies that were green, again, quickly became red or brown, and that showed us that amount of damage. There's other kind of damage that's really important to note that we can't pick up a satellite, and we think this event led to other kinds of damage as well that then propagated in subsequent growing seasons. But what we could see with the satellites was the damage to the leaves themselves on these canopies.
My guest is Dr. Chris Still. He's a professor in the College of Forestry at Oregon State University and one of the co-authors of a new study published in Global Change Biology. It's titled, Extreme Heat Wave Causes Immediate Widespread Mortality of Forest Canopy Foliage, Highlighting Modes of Forest Sensitivity to Extreme Heat. That's a long title, Dr. Still.
It is.
Did the kind of tree matter in relation to the damage it sustained?
It did. It mattered a lot. The kind of tree did matter. And one of the things that people noted, forest managers, forest biologists, people who knew a lot about trees, they noticed pretty quickly that some species seem to be damaged more than others. One of the ones that was very obviously more damaged is Western hemlock. Another one that people noticed and that our analysis picked up is Western red cedar. And then another one that was also very sensitive to the heat is Sitka spruce. And that sort of sensitivity to heat makes some sense from a physiological sense, because a lot of these same species tend to also be either more shade tolerant, like Western hemlocks typically grow beneath taller Douglas fir trees in the shade, and they're tolerant of that shade and in fact don't always like the direct sunlight. And a lot of these species are also very drought sensitive. And so generally we think that the traits that make a tree sensitive to drought also make it sensitive to heat and vice versa. The more resistant to drought, you're also more likely to be more resistant to heat. And so some of the species that we identified as being more sensitive definitely makes sense from a sort of biological or physiological basis. So the species definitely matters.
Well, what about the age of the tree? How did old growth forests fare in this study?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And it's the answer is kind of nuanced, and it depends a lot on context, which is often the story in studies of ecology. So we think lots of areas of young trees at the coast, particularly like in plantation forests, were heavily damaged and in some sense had less resilience than the older trees, which we think had more resilience. But having said that, in places like Olympic National Park, that was an area that was unexpected to me to know that there was a lot of damage there, but the satellites really picked up damage there. And in that case, in Olympic National Park, a lot of the really damaged stands were old growth Western hemlock dominated forests. So in that case, the older hemlocks were also quite sensitive, just as the younger ones were. But as a rule of thumb, the younger the tree, the more heat sensitive and the more damage occurred. So we know that from forest plantations at the coast where seedlings had been planted and the Western hemlock seedling suffered the worst damage. The Douglas fir seedlings also suffered a lot of damage as well. We know that from Christmas tree farms where the younger trees suffered a heck of a lot of damage. And again, there were also species that did better than others. So generally speaking, we think the older trees do better and are more resistant to heat, sort of regardless of species. But again, there's a lot of nuance and context that goes into that.
So what else did scientists learn from this study, aside from the extensive damage caused by a heat dome?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was sort of a wake-up call to just the event was so extreme in so many ways, and it affected so many aspects of our society and of the natural system. I think it was an example of what heat can do layered on top of drought. People often talk about drought effects leading to forest mortality, and that's a very, with very good reason. There's a very strong connection between drought and forced mortality. But those patterns that are produced by drought are typically different and take longer to develop versus this thing here where you just have this immediate impact on the canopies of these trees. And so that was a real, I think, wake-up call to see what he could do with this sort of scorching. And as far as we know, this is the largest spatial area that's ever been scorched by a heat event, at least that we know of in the literature. So it was quite a notable event. And I think there's also, you know, reason for hope. There's definitely areas where there's a lot of resilience to this. So it's not all doom and gloom. There's definitely areas and species that seem to fare better with this heat event. But it's also, you know, something that we know that heat waves are getting more frequent, more common, more intense. The temperatures are getting higher and they're lasting longer. And so we definitely think there's need to focus a lot more on the sort of heat stress physiology of trees to better understand what may be coming for our forest landscapes, and also to think proactively about how we can replant areas so that, say, a fire's come through and you want to do replanting. What are the species or the genotypes of certain species that tend to be more heat and drought tolerant? So thinking ahead about our landscapes, what things can we do proactively from a sort of management perspective to help address these you know, heat waves that are, again, getting more and more common.
Well, you mentioned resiliency. Did you find that there are certain species that are more resilient, and did they teach you anything?
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, like Douglas fir tends to be pretty resilient. There are plenty of areas where Douglas fir was affected, but it's a really amazing species in many ways, and it's pretty resilient to drought, and we think it's pretty resilient to heat. And there's ongoing research that some of us at Oregon State are doing to look at characterizing different populations of Douglas fir throughout the Pacific Northwest to understand if there are populations that have distinct genotypes that confer some sort of resilience for heat and for drought. And again, we think those tend to co-occur. The more drought-resistant genotypes are probably more heat-resistant. So, yeah, there are some species that tended to fare better than others, certainly.
Well, you mentioned forest mortality. And I have to tell you, when I think of mortality, yeah, I think of something that ceases to exist. I can't imagine that trees, an entire forest of trees, they play such a vital role in our environmental ecosystems, ceasing to exist.
Yeah, and I think that's the big concern everyone has. This event certainly led to pockets of not just canopy mortality where the leaves died, but the whole tree died. And in some cases that happened that season in 2021, and we know in other locations, it really knocked those trees back, and then other factors may have come in like bark beetles and then taken them out. So whenever a tree dies, it's due to there's a whole bunch of factors that do that kill a tree, sort of the near-term things, and then the things that led it to be weakened. And so it's certainly a concern that we're focused on is the mortality of the whole tree and then large areas on the landscape. And I think one thing our study did was to show areas where we think we need to be really watchful, where there's a lot of sensitivity to heat and the drought, and also areas where there are what we think of as climate refuges or refugia, where we think they're going to be better positioned to withstand future heat events and co-occurring drought events.
Well, we have about a minute left, and I've got a tough question for you. We can't control the sun.
So, right.
How can we protect our forests from increasing temperatures and the increasing frequency of catastrophic weather events, like what you just talked about, that heat dome? And what is our role in this environmental ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, I think individually, everyone can do what they can to drive less, to emit less carbon. I think that's a message that still needs to be really reinforced. Every amount of extra carbon released into the atmosphere leads to more eventual warming, which leads to things like heat waves. So at the personal level, we can all do a lot. And I think in terms of like forest managers and people that have, small woodland owners, there's ways we can try to investigate other species that might provide a better refuge for certain species that we know are really sensitive. If there's a way to shade them in the way you plant your trees or have your property, there are certain species, again, if they're shaded, they tend to do better with these heat events. So there are things you can do proactively. And again, that there's research ongoing at Oregon State and my group and others try to understand which genotypes of Douglas fir and also which species might be more heat resistant for future planting.
Well, thank you and thank your team for your role in this study. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks very much.
My guest was Dr. Chris Still. He's a professor in the College of Forestry at Oregon State University.